Didn't even get a chance to talk about the Manchester derby, which I know you were very keen to. What's your ideal outcome of that game, by the way?
Manchester United win, no threat to Liverpool, and Manchester City are. It's as simple as that.
OTB AM, live weekday mornings from 7:30 on the OTB Sports app.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
You are welcome along. So the International November Series officially up and running over the weekend. Wales lost to South Africa. Fan on the pitch stopped them scoring a try at 15 points apiece well into the second half. South Africa bomb squad to the fore, finished strongly to win 23 points to 18. New Zealand, lots of changes for a comfortable win in Rome, 47 points to 9, 7 tries scored. England beat Tonga, full house at Twickenham, 69 points to 3. And then the Scots, they beat Australia 15 points to 13. Wasn't a classic match, but great result for Scotland. They will play South Africa next. That is three wins in a row against Australia. Australia themselves on a five-match winning streak. So very good win there for Scotland. And of course, Saturday lunchtime, Ireland 60, Japan 5. Very happy to bring in Matt Williams, the former Scotland coach. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Joe.
And Jerry Thornley of the Irish Times. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, Joe, how you doing?
Yeah, very well. So, Matt, I'll start with you. Ireland 60, Japan 5, 9 tries scored, 1 conceded, 8 of the 9 tries from backline players for Ireland. Keane Healy's was the only pick-and-go effort. 18 offloads, 14 line breaks, quick ball all day. Opposition notwithstanding, the nature of this performance behind the scoreboard was extremely impressive, I'd put it to you.
Absolutely. You've got to give the Irish team credit for how they played. You can only play the opposition that run out against you, and they exploited the Japanese side on at every opportunity. There was some great passing, some wonderful short attacking kicks. Jamison Gibson Park, beautiful little kick through there for the try for Andrew Conway in the opening half. You know, it was a complete display. The thing I really liked about it was their ambition to offload, which is something I've been banging on about for years, that you've got to take your opportunities in an international match by offloading, and that's really decision-making. In its purest form, it's a decision you make whether to pass or not, and you only get better at that by practicing it in real time in games. And there was some absolutely glorious play. Furlong's passing, as we've known for years, was first class. Probably the only blemish on the game. It's not blemish, is the wrong term, but the line-out didn't function as to the standards that we've held in the past, which have been the best in the world. Paul O'Connell's line-out has statistically been the best on the planet, and that they made a few errors there, a couple of throws and a couple of missed catches. But apart from that, they took a very disappointing Japanese side completely to pieces. And they couldn't do any more than that, and probably fitting for Johnny's 100th as well, one of our greatest ever players in the pantheon of the all-time greats, and to have the team play so well and give him a satisfying day was more than he deserved.
Jerry, we've been waiting for some time for Ireland to really move in this direction like this, to this extent, and we really saw it on Saturday.
Yeah, we did. Although, you know, I think there have been signs of this coming. I don't think it was a complete one-off the way you and everybody else has interpreted it. I think there
Hang on. I'm saying we've been waiting for them to move this significantly. They have been moving, but this was a significant step, I would say, on anything else they've done.
Yeah, I would agree. Although I still think, you know, they played a lot of fantastic rugby. There were signs of this coming in the Six Nations last year, notably away to France and at home to England, which is probably still a better win given the standard of the opposition, and Ireland really putting them to the sword that day. Mm. But it was probably more to do with the execution of the line-out and breakdown. This, as Matt said, seemed to be a greater willingness for players to free their arms at the tackle and look for offloads. And there were support trailers. It was great animation off the ball. There always seems to be options for the ball carriers. And all done at this really, really high tempo because of that execution at the breakdown. And it was great to see. You'd have to admit Japan were poor, disappointingly poor. But then again, how much of that was down to Ireland making them look so poor? It was interesting that Andy Farrell afterwards, he maintained that the best part of the performance was defence. Now, I think he was just being devil's advocate to a degree there, but you think about it, you know, whenever Japan tried to break out, like, they did work once, a couple of times they worked with some spare numbers out wide with well-executed launch plays, and Gary Ringrose on one occasion completely cut that down from the outside, as he did on another couple of occasions when forcing them back inside, and that led to one of the tries. So I thought it was a very complete performance, very, very skillful, very dynamic, ambitious, lots of intent there. And it was great to see, a great way to, it was a bit of a landmark day. Johnny Sexton will probably now move into a very select company, not just of one of the seven century makers, but maybe right up there now with Paul O'Connell and Brian O'Driscoll as, you know, one of Ireland's three greatest ever rugby players. I think Jamie Heaslip said he'd have me number one. And it was fitting that he marked the day. They did like all those touchline conversions with the breeze. Like it was a kind of a reflection of how Ireland went about the game, that so many tries were scored out in the corners. You think of that one where Andrew Conway fielded a high ball, they go wide left, James Lowe, and he's got about a centimetre to spare before he offloads inside to Jemison Gibson Park. And then they go up through the middle with Tadhg Furlong, that lovely no-look pass, and Johnny Sexton, Tadhg Byrne, Josh Van De Fleer, Bundiaki, all charging onto the ball at pace, all looking for offloads. And then another quick recycle and that wonderful grubber kick from Jemison Gibson Park. So it had a lot of everything in it. So I thought it was a very good all-court performance, and great to see.
And what's your sense of Japan, Gerry? In what respects were they very different to the team, say, who scored 31 points against Ireland? Admittedly, an Irish team, obviously not at full strength, but 31 points nonetheless in Dublin just in July.
Yeah, and the core of the same side. And even, you know, welcoming back Nagare, their scrum half of the World Cup and so forth, they were just completely shut down by Ireland's defence. Their own line speed was almost non-existent in defence. They've always leaked tries a little bit, but there was nothing like the requisite line speed required for this level of rugby. It was quite passive. Ireland could almost do whatever they wanted. It certainly won't be like that next Saturday. It would be interesting to see where Japan go from this. I would be very interested to see their game in Scotland in a couple of weeks' time and see, you know, and judge their performance on Saturday against whatever they produce in Murrayfield in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah. Andy Farrell, as you mentioned, Gerry, he singled out the Irish defence. Ireland, Matt, 78% possession in the first half, 67% territory. It was 29-0 at half time. They didn't miss a single tackle in the first half, 11 across the game. The second half, obviously, the game changed somewhat given the scoreline. What's your sense of Japan? Because obviously, when we're trying to judge this Irish performance, you have to take the opposition into account. But I mean, our last two experiences of Japan would suggest they're far from a bad side. So that's kind of, it's kind of tricky to get a feel for what they were about on Saturday.
It is, Joe, because when they played Australia only a few weeks ago, they lost to Australia, but the score line flattered the Wallabies. They scored breakout tries. The thing that I couldn't get my head around, I don't have an answer for you on your question, was their lack of aggression, because that is what Japanese teams have always done. That they are unbelievably powerful men, and they come at you at 200 mile an hour, and that has been their hallmarks, and especially in the era since Eddie Jones took over 6 or 7 years ago, then handed on to Jamie Joseph. That is what they were, and they were anything but aggressive on Saturday. And, you know, on every front, when they carried the ball, they didn't look like they had any conviction. And that's the reason why I think there were so many offloads. I'm not criticising in any way the Irish performance. I'm not trying to take away from it. I'm just trying to put it in perspective from the Japanese point of view. Their tackling was so passive that they were coming in low. There was no second tackle, so they were allowing the Irish players the opportunity to offload. So I don't know why they weren't, but the drop in standard was quite alarming from their own standards they set against, you know, some really good sides they've played in the last 2 years, 3 years since the World Cup. That is considerably below where they have been. And I don't have an answer for you, but I can guarantee you it won't be like that next Saturday. We don't have to worry about that answer come Saturday afternoon at the Aviva. The New Zealand boys are coming, and they got guns loaded, and they want it, and they want to bring it on. This is the game they've got. This is the game they've got their eyes on for sure. So it'll be a very, very, very different story Saturday afternoon.
Jerry, we'll come to Jemison Gibson Park in a second, and who starts at 9 next Saturday. I think maybe last Saturday answers that question. But certainly Gibson Park was helped by the speed of the Irish ball at ruck time. And just something I wanted to throw at you and get your thoughts on. Certainly I remember doing various pieces here for the early part of the Andy Farrell era before Paul O'Connell came on board. And Brian O'Driscoll certainly said it, and several others said that Ireland's work at the breakdown had slipped. You know, this was one of the real signatures under Joe Schmidt, that Ireland were so efficient at the breakdown. And Schmidt would talk about the breakdown being the heartbeat of the game. And Paul O'Connell, it always seemed, really subscribed to that notion, you know, talked about being with Munster and not understanding why they couldn't get at Leinster at the breakdown, and then understanding when he worked under Schmidt. And I don't know, I'm kind of putting two and two together here a little bit and curious for your thoughts on it all. But I would suspect Paul O'Connell, amongst all his other work, has, you know, refocused everybody a little bit on efficiency at the breakdown, because Ireland looks so much better in that department now.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. Andy Farrell has got many things right in his, you know, truncated two-year reign thus far. And probably his best move of all was bringing Paul O'Connell onto the ticket, not just for the way he's addressed the lineup, but for also the way he's addressed the breakdown. It was back to its best against England, particularly, I thought, in that home game at the end, middle of March, the end of the Six Nations. You know, I think with one of the tries, 30-odd phases, and most of the time it was rapid, quick ball as well. They just pounded England to submission. I think it was for the Jack Conan try, and that really smacked of, you know, the vintage Joe Schmidt years that Ireland enjoyed under Joe. And that is one of his legacies, that Paul O'Connell is a disciple of Joe Schmidt's breakdown work. And you can see that in this team now. There were some magnificent clear outs. I remember one from Andrew Porter in the build-up to one of the tries. It meant that the ball was just presented on a silver salver for Jemison Gibson Park. And I think that's where you're coming from, that it was a very much an entirely front foot game for Gibson Park, and he revelled in it, no doubt about it. And it emanated in large part from the breakdown work. Even if you are going to offload 18 times, even if you get into the 20s, you're still going to have to clean out ruck balls 5, 6, 7 times that amount of time in the game. So it's still, in a sense, the heartbeat of it. It's something that the All Blacks do very well as well. And it gives Ireland a chance next Saturday if they maintain that high standard, the breakdown work as well, because that was a notable feature of the time they beat them in the Aviva Stadium and Chicago as well. You've got to generate quick ball to have a chance.
So Gibson Park starts on Saturday, does he, Matt?
He does, in my book, because I'll come back to Jerry's points there, which are very, very salient points. But the only way you beat New Zealand is not by kicking, is not by simply trying to rope-a-dope. You can never beat New Zealand rope-a-dope. You've got to attack them. You've got to go at them. And you're not going to play their game, you have to play your own game. But it has to be a game where you are attacking them. You cannot just sit back and play a percentage game. It just does not work. And Jamison Gibson Park is giving fastball, but that fastball also, if we come back a little bit, this is really important for Saturday's game against New Zealand. Fastball has its genesis in how the ball carrier accepts it, runs onto it, and his footwork before he comes into the contact zone. So if you are running on the ball, you have purpose in it, and when you're accepting the ball, you're not standing still, and you're really thinking about trying to beat that man in front of you, that even if you don't beat him, you land in a good spot, and it makes the clear out 10 times easier, because the clear out is coming on his own terms. In other words, the defence hasn't determined where you're getting tackled. The attack does. So that all, and I'm not disagreeing with anything Jerry said there about Paul O'Connell's influence and how good Joe was at the breakdown and it being the heartbeat of the game. I'm not doing any of that. One of the things that Farrell has got better at in coaching this side, and I believe it's because they're following Leinster, and I'm not trying to get anything out of Leinster, I think it's the right thing to do, is the Irish players are running onto the ball, they're using footwork, and they've got a different mindset. And that in itself promotes fast ball. If you can get fast ball against New Zealand and push their D under pressure, they will give away a lot of penalties to slow the game down. And then that brings you into the game with them, because you've got to deny them ball. If you just kick them the ball, they'll love it. That's what you want. Give me the ball. And depending who they play at fullback, you know, what about all the options they have back there and the back three, they will come back at you and really hurt you. So I think, yes, Jamison Gibson Park does start there because the team is producing fast ball, and if you can produce fast ball against New Zealand, you can put them under pressure, and he exploits that right now better than Connor does.
Jerry, to another interesting case, James Lowe. So he was maybe the curveball in the selection on Saturday, just gone, and it'll be very interesting to see, does he get the nod again on Saturday, where his defence is going to be tested more than it was at the weekend. Of Lowe, Andy Farrell was quite interesting. He said, first of all, James has had a bit of a wake-up call. He went away. He understood how he needed to prepare for international rugby. His preparation's through the roof in comparison to what it was before. He's learned the hard way. And then he said, James isn't a tidy player. But neither do we want our players to be tidy players. He said he finds a way into the game. He's in great nick. He's lost a bit of weight and he's fit. I even thought that point about not wanting tidy players. I feel like Joe Schmidt wanted tidy players, immaculate players who he knew you know, what they were going to do in advance. So maybe that's even a slight shift away from a previous era in James Lowe. But, I mean, he was all action. I mean, it was all the good parts of James Lowe on display.
Yes, and he wasn't asked any questions defensively really at all. But it was quite striking, I thought, the way they moved the ball blind to James Lowe early on, or even brought him up through the middle early on. He made more line breaks, I think, than anybody else. Of the 18 offloads, I think he made 6 of them. He brings that left foot option as well. You know, even that way he got out of the tight corner in his own line with that kind of banana kick to find touch outside the 22. Yeah. There's a few players that actually have that in their skill set. He's no doubt he brings a lot of X factor. He's a good finisher. He knows where the try line is. And if you can get him even that bit more professional, that bit fitter, that bit better prepared for every game, then you're going to have a real test match player. There's no doubt about that, certainly going forward. There's no doubt about that. And I'm sure that some people might make something of Jameson Gibson-Park and James Lowe and Bundy Aki all starting against the All Blacks this weekend. But the thing about it is, not, you know, but the All Blacks have such a conveyor belt of talent that, you know, one or two might miss the net. They can't have everybody. And the thing about a player like James Lowe or Jameson Gibson-Park, when they're exposed to a setup like Leinster's and then Ireland's, when they're exposed to Heineken Cup matches and Test rugby, they become better players. So they're now better players, much better players than the ones who first came over here. And it's a tribute to the coaching setups and the organisations in Leinster and Ireland that this is so. And they were the most probably questioned selections of all, Gibson-Park at scrum half and Lowe. But you have to say that no less than Andrew Conway in the right wing, all these selections were utterly vindicated. For sure, the All Blacks will have done their homework as much on Lowe. They'll know Lowe better than anybody. And they will look to test him with balls in behind and expose him one-on-one out wide. And we'll see how he copes with that. But in terms of his overall performance, it was huge. It was really huge. It suggests that very often a player might break into a team. They think it comes pretty easy to them or whatever. And it's very few don't get a jolt somewhere along the way. Even All Blacks players, you know, often dropped out of their team and they come back better for the experience. You know, if it doesn't break you, it'll make you. And maybe this will be the making of James Lowe.
It's a very interesting one, Matt, because there's plenty of experience there and defensive experience who could slot in on Saturday. And yet we saw what Lowe brings to the party. The question mark is, where is he defensively? To jog people's memory, I mean, he played 6 Nations games and effectively lost his place because there were just several bad reads or bad mistakes in defence. So the question is, to what extent he's on top of that department now against the All Blacks?
Yeah, and, you know, he could be facing... We don't know how New Zealand will stack their... I don't mean stack in a bad way, but how they'll select their side. You know, if they start Richie Monga at 10, Bowden Barrett goes to fullback, he could be facing Geordie Barrett or Ricky Ione. You know, like whoever is on that wing is going to be asking some seriously big questions of the Irish defenders. And James got caught out last time. Now, the great thing about what Farrell did in selecting him, he sent a great message out. You know, we're not writing anyone off. If you're not good enough when we send you away and you go away and work at your game and you show us you're good enough, you'll get another chance. Now, whether that happens this week for Conway and Lowe, that's the two questions I don't have an answer for. I'd be very interesting to see what the structure of the Irish back three is. Of course, it's going to be crucial. That's where they're coming at you. The New Zealand scores so many tries in that last 5 centimetres on either side of the field. They're just brilliant at moving it. And when you've got the two Barretts and Richie Mo'unga on the field, and then, you know, I think they'll pick David Havili at inside centre, who's playing like the old second 5-8s that New Zealand called them, the second 5s. They are really coming at you. Damien McKenzie in the last few minutes as well. That's going to be key selections. And they're big men. If they pick Ione and Geordie Barrett on the wings, these are two tall, big dudes. So you've got the aerial battle as well, which is going to put Conway and Lowe to a lesser degree at a disadvantage. So what they do, as in Andy Farrell does with that back three, I think is absolutely crucial. I will say this. The selections, the way Farrell has done it the last few games, by that I mean by the England game and the Japanese game when everyone's available, he's got his selection spot on. So he knows his players. He knows who's playing well. But they will be crucial decisions. I hope for James's sake that he gets a chance and he comes up trumps, that he beats those Demons. He's a really nice man. He's given a lot to Irish rugby, and I hope he gets the chance to prove himself. And what a day to prove himself against the country of his birth. But I don't have an answer for that, whether he has overcome those Demons in defence, because they were there for the world to see, and New Zealand are ruthless. They're coming at him.
Yeah. Jerry, have you noticed?
Just a cautionary tale on that. Yes, he's most likely going to come up against Will Jordan, this latest discovery in the New Zealand wing, who's ridiculously quick.
Yeah.
Teal. Did you see the try he got against Wales? He made Welsh look like they were jogging on the spot. I think he's got 16 tries in his first 11 tests.
Yes.
Now, some of them might have been against Tonga or the USA, it was a hat-trick against the USA, whatever else, but he is just jet-heeled.
And Jerry, is your sense, even just in so much as you can read into URC games, that Lowe has improved defensively, or is it just not enough of a barometer to tell?
I don't think there's been enough of a barometer to tell. That was one of the great difficulties that Andy Farrell and the coaches had, that there was just this five rounds of URC games, and the standout games were probably the two Irish derbies. Let's be honest, they were a long way removed from Test rugby. We've spoken about this before, that normally Ireland would go into a November series with everybody having played a couple of exacting Heineken Champions Cup games against French opposition or whatever else, and none of that applied this time. So there wasn't a huge amount of barometers out there in terms of how well players were playing in every aspect of their game. And I don't think, the acid test for James Lowe probably will be this Saturday. I think that's another reason why you have to give credit to Andy Farrell and the coaches for getting that selection right. There was much discussed about how blue-tinged it was, but that pack, even though it's dominated by Leinster players, it's so dynamic. We were talking earlier about, Matt was making a good point about, how comfortable they are on the ball and what good footwork they have. You can throw nearly all the forwards into that mix, like Tadhg Byrne, Tadhg Furlong, Jack Conan, all coming back from the Lions. I think every player in the pack is aged between 23 and 29, average age about 26. Like, the core of this pack could be there, not just for this World Cup cycle, the one following too. I know it doesn't always work out like that, but then you see players like Dan Sheehan coming through, giving his debut off the bench. This, as Paul O'Connell said, there's a new breed of Irish forward coming through now. Very athletic, very dynamic.
Yes, well, we should develop that point, actually. Just one other thing on Lowe. I mean, you mentioned his popularity, Matt. I mean, I'm sure journalists like him as well. Jerry, reading his quotes afterwards, and the weight issue was mentioned to him, and I'll read out his quotes. Apologies for any language. Kids in the car, flick it off now. It's not too severe, don't worry, but just due warning. So on the weight issue, he said, Andy said it, as in Andy Farrell said he'd lost weight. He said it twice. I'll have to have a word with him afterwards. Now, I have lost weight a little bit. I guess I'm a little fitter, I guess. But bloody billow on him for saying it behind my back. At least he could have said it to my face. And then he said, it was a conscious effort. I thought, how could I evolve my game? It was probably through being fitter. I threw off a few kilos. I've been spinning around the field a bit easier. Bollocks on him. Jesus. He said, Andy Farrell. So that was James Lowe in good form. I mean, it's the one great thing you would say about him, Jerry, is even through the, I'd say, tough experience that was the Six Nations, he never took the criticism personally. He's not sitting there bristling at journalists. He understands how all of it works, which is, I think, a credit to him.
So engaging, and he's so natural and free and easy in front of the media, just the same he is with everybody else, I'd say. I remember the first time I interviewed him was when he was playing for the New Zealand Maoris against Ireland, and his confirmation from joining Leinster had already been announced, and he gave this very engaging, enjoyable, humorous interview. He said, whatever you do, please don't change, because the Irish system has a habit of making players come out with the same kind of stuff and being very careful in what they say. And it's particularly difficult in the last year and a half when every interview is through a camera. You know what I mean? We're not meeting these players, any of us, anymore. It's all Zoom calls and whatever else and on a camera. And he hasn't changed one iota. He's remained true to himself and just the same fella. And it's great to see. Yeah, it is one of the reasons why I think we all do like him. On a personal level, you couldn't but.
Yeah. Matt, then on Jerry's point about the Irish pack, as he mentioned, average age of 26, you think of that front row when they all came off, you suddenly had a look at Porter and Kelleher and Furlong's the daddy at 28. And as Jerry said, I mean, that's not just the next World Cup, it's probably the one after, all going well, and Dan Sheehan off the bench to make his debut. So that pack had a dynamism, had a skill set, footwork. I mean, again, Japan and their performance notwithstanding, we're entitled now to start feeling a sense of enthusiasm about what's going on here, aren't we?
Yeah, I think so. I think we are, but the guts of this team have had really positive numbers against them for a long time, especially the pack. Like the scrum and the line out have been functioning brilliantly. As I said, world-class numbers they're putting out as far as their efficiency, winning ball and going for as a pack. What has not been world-class and has been very up and down is how the team have taken that ball forward and how the forwards have been used in taking that ball forward. And that's been the big improvements for me. Plus, you know, we've got to just not worry about the eight. We've got to, you know, 16, 17, 18, 19 and 20 have a massive part to play in modern rugby as it is as well. So it's the wholeness of that group. And then you're starting to say, how can Ian Henderson, that many of us thought should have started a test match down in South Africa, not make that side, not make the starting team? How can Byrne, how does Kalyn Doris keep Byrne out of the sixth spot and force him into the second row? Now, I'm not saying any of those are wrong decisions, but it just tells you the strength of the group when you're looking at that. And you've got a balanced back row of Kalyn Doris, Josh van der Vleer and Jack Carney. You know, that's a fabulous back row. It's like a classic back row if you were going to make them. The genuine open side, a shorter, powerful number eight, and a tall, lanky runner and stopper of tackles. Like you look through this, and it's very hard to find a weakness. Maybe how Dave Kilcoyne misses out, I don't know. But you've got to give Finlay Beelam his credit. I question his selection in that pack, but he went out and he did really, really well. Now, it was against Japan, and it's not against New Zealand, but you can only play who you play against. And yes, there is depth there. The question still comes up, Joe, and this comes back to your original question. With only Sexton as a playmaker and a lot of the play coming off Sexton, that still remains, to me, a weakness and a question that will only be answered at full time on Saturday. Is that enough to really cope with New Zealand's defence, just having Sexton? So the pack is great. The team was great. The performance against Japan was great. The performance against England was fantastic. So maybe it is enough. Maybe this will be enough. But it remains a big, big question on my books.
No, it sure does. And just to mention as well, Ireland New Zealand is a sellout. Tickets have been snapped up. You won't be surprised to hear. However, together with Vodafone, we have a group of three tickets up for grabs. So if you tune in to Wednesday Night Rugby this week, you could win a pair of tickets to cheer on Ireland at the Aviva this Saturday. Again, with thanks to Vodafone, hashtag Team of Us. Gerry, to Saturday then, a final thought from you on how it's going to go. They're in, you would say, very fine form, 96 tries in 2021, which breaks Argentina's record of 92 set in 2003. Their points tally beats the South African haul from 2007. Second string, quote-unquote, against Italy, and it's no problem, 7 tries. Whether it's Barrett or Moonga at 10 remains to be seen. Either way, this won't be easy, to say the least. What chance do you give Ireland?
I actually thought Ireland had a chance last Friday, talking with somebody who knows rugby, going into these two games. I actually thought Ireland would have a chance against the All Blacks on the presumption that they were going to beat Japan, obviously, and maybe not as well as they did, but they almost beat them too well in the end. But I do think Ireland have a chance. I don't think the All Blacks particularly enjoy playing Ireland. I think Ireland were playing their faces. They know how to beat them. There's a, you know, they've got some of the coaches staff and the playing staff there who've beaten them, whether it's with Ireland or the Lions. I think that Ireland going into this game in good form with the home crowd behind them. I don't think the nature of their end-of-year tour has particularly match-hardened the All Blacks, you know what I mean? A romp, running up a century against the USA in Washington, you know, putting up 50 against a Welsh side weakened by playing outside the international window and then going to Rome. I'm sure it was commercially viable, all these three matches, and made money for all concerned, which is important. And it's very much like the All Blacks because they're great ambassadors for their country and for the sport. I mean, imagine rugby without the All Blacks. And, you know, they spread the gospel everywhere they go. And it's a brilliant brand of rugby. They really do play an all-court game. It's the ultimate test. You know, they will kick plenty. They'll try and play in the right areas. They'll be direct. They'll earn the right to go wide. And then they are lethal if you make mistakes or make turnover ball. I think Ireland, I hope they go and play with the same ambition and intent, but you have to be so careful against them because it's worth going to do this 2 years out from a World Cup. But just salient reminder watching, going through the, some of the All Blacks games. I think in the three games against Australia, the Wallabies coughed up five intercept tries. And you saw against Wales there when Bowden Barrett pinched off a couple of intercept tries as well. So when you play with ambition and talent, you've got to be more accurate against these guys than anybody else as well. But yeah, I could get a cracking good chance for sure. I think it'd be a damn sight more competitive game than the World Cup quarterfinal was. That's true.
Well, we hope, yeah. So damn good chance there, reckons Jerry, all things going well. Matt, what about you?
I think New Zealand go in as favourites. You know, they've beaten the Wallabies three times, the Pumas twice. It was 1-1 against South Africa. I think even the most ardent South African supporter would say the referee influenced the last minute of the game. They should have beaten South Africa 2-0. I mean, they're the best team in the world. What a great opportunity to measure yourself against the best in the world. And I think Ireland are coming along nicely. They've moved forward a lot. There's no pressure on Ireland. Everyone in the world thinks New Zealand will win. But New Zealand also want a bit of revenge. So for what happened in 2018, they'll be coming back here and they're a better side than they were in 2018. But I agree with Jerry. I think Ireland have got a real shot at them. And I just think it's going to be a fantastic game of rugby. New Zealand should win, but this is not going to be... At the World Cup, I got in trouble, unlike me, because I said I think Ireland are going to lose by 50, and they did. But no one wanted to hear that. I don't think this Ireland side's a good side. The trouble with playing New Zealand is you can be with them at the 60-minute mark and play a great hour of rugby and still lose by 50. That's how good this team is, for all the reasons Jerry just put out there. And that's what happened to the Wallabies. The Wallabies, for two of the tests, were going really, really well. And then, bang, they just got done in the last 15. Look at Wales. Wales were two scores away at the 60-minute mark, done by 50. They're coming up against a great side. It'll be a wonderful day, great occasion, and Ireland certainly have got a shot at this.
Okay. So, we'll be previewing this right across the week. Loads to discuss with various people. Just to mention, Jerry, I mean, I don't really know what there is to say about it, but people didn't see the most bizarre moment of the weekend, I think, from a rugby point of view, was Liam Williams smelling blood and then fan on the pitch being chased by a couple of stewards. And if looks could kill, Josh Adams did his best, hands on his hips, looking at this fella being dragged off. And there's various videos going around of he has to walk the perimeter of the pitch, or he's being walked, rather, by the security staff. I'd say 400 pints of plastic beer rained down on him. And I'd say, look, reading the reports, apparently death threats have landed on him, and is, you know, not good in young family. And it was all for a £20 bet, reportedly, said Wales Online. So that was a hard earned £20, I would think. I mean, madness.
Yep, madness. I don't really know what the answer is. Like, you don't want to, I presume he had a few of those plastic containers worked inside him as well when he did this.
We don't know. I mean, we don't even know. I mean, it sounds like it was pre-planned. Trying to rationalise it is almost a silly thing to do, isn't it?
Well, yeah, because it's such a silly thing to do in the first place. I mean, what would possess somebody to do that? It's just, yeah, it's ridiculous. You feel sorry for the opprobrium he's going to get now, I suppose, and all the criticism is going to come his way. I'd say he's lying low, wouldn't you? Fine, very low. Jeepers. What a thing to do. So, infamy. Everybody's got an infamy. They will now.
Yeah. I mean, could you imagine a World Cup final or a bigger game if something like that happened?
Jeepers.
Be something else. Yeah. Matt, as for the Australians, lost to the Scots, 15 points to 13. Who are you cheering for here?
I was sitting there watching pretty dispassionately, to be honest with you, Joe. Very disappointing game of rugby. It's the conversation you and I and Jerry had a couple of weeks ago. The whole game, the camera was on the referee Roman Pott. It wasn't on Finn Russell. It wasn't on James O'Connor, the Australian out half, and the Scottish out half. All these talented guys. It was on the referee. It was on penalties at scrum times. It was on pedantic decisions. The Wallabies scored two tries. Look, I thought they both should have stood. There was one, there was rule for foul play. Alan Alato came in for a clear out and clipped the chin of the guy. Definitely touched his head, and that's the rules. But every other time was a player's head touched, did the player get sin bin and penalised? No, it didn't. So the team that should have won that game, which was Australia, didn't win. In the South African game, team that should have won the game didn't win. Australia beat South Africa in the championship. The team that won that game didn't win. South Africa should have won that game. All because of refereeing decisions, technical refereeing decisions. The best teams, the teams that are showing the skill, are not winning games. It was terrible to watch. And I'm not blaming the Scottish players or the Australian players. Both teams came out with real intent. They wanted to play. But the scrummaging and the pedantic refereeing and the way it was carried on, you know, it was throw pillows at the TV time. It was. I just wanted someone to run the ball and score a try, and they just couldn't do it. Scots deserved to win in many ways. They were brave, and they beat Australia three times in a row. But, you know, did the best team win? No. And it's just another example of where our game is with officiating and the laws. And I certainly hope that... I cannot remember. There probably was one. Of all the scrums in the game, there were a lot of scrums because the handling was poor. The ball hardly got passed to the tens in any of the scrums. Now, I just hope on Saturday when Ireland play New Zealand and what could be a great game of rugby, that referee Pierce, who's got the game, doesn't make it into another game like Roman Pott and all the other referees have made some of these tests into, because it really was not enjoyable to watch in any way. I didn't care who won, but it was not enjoyable to watch.
Okay.
Matt, it was Roman Pott's last match, Matt, wasn't it? I think it was, Joe.
It was, mate, and people were being kind to him and trying to, you know, say, well done. I get that. But, like, the camera was just on him. what other sport in the world do we have the camera on the official for the majority of the match? It's just outrageous at the moment. And I can't say I enjoyed any of it. Not because Australia lost. That's not the point. I'm just wanting to enjoy the rugby. And it was not enjoyable.
Okay. More than fair enough, I think. Matt Williams, thanks very much.
Pleasure, guys. Chad.
Jerry Thornley of the Irish Times. Thanks so much, Jerry. Appreciate it.
Cheers, Joe.
Cheers. So Matt and Jerry there with us on Monday Night Rugby. You can podcast the full chat if you're just tuning in. You'll get it on the OTB Sports app. And again, Ireland, New Zealand, it is a sellout. However, with thanks to Vodafone, we've got a group of three tickets up for grabs. Tune in to Wednesday Night Rugby this week and you could win a set of three tickets to cheer on Ireland against New Zealand. Or if you want New Zealand against Ireland, we're not going to discriminate. And it's all with thanks to Vodafone. Hashtag Team of Us.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of Us. Everyone in.